Welcome to the Daily Path Podcast, where it's all about building an authentic life and business. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and now for today's message. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Daily Path Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and today I'm joined by Paul Glover, who is a TEDx speaker and leadership coach that helps his clients accomplish higher levels of performance by assisting them to recognize and achieve their potential. Paul has spent over 20 years providing coaching for executives and leaders of organizations that generate up to $1 billion in annual revenue, is a member of the Forbes Coaching Council, and has authored the book Workquake, Making the Seismic Shift to a Knowledge Economy. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So today I would like to talk to you about how you help executives and leaders recognize and achieve their potential so they can reach higher levels of performance and the step-by-step approach you take for signing new clients. So let's start with before you begin coaching. You tried labor and employment cases before federal court juries for 25 years and discovered that members of a jury only relate to an attorney's client when the facts of the case are woven into a cohesive and persuasive narrative and engaging story. How did this discovery come about during your career as a trial lawyer?
Well, I went through law school, working nights and going days, but I found that, I wanted to be a trial lawyer. From the time I decided to be a lawyer, I wanted to be a trial lawyer. Mm. That's a completely different career than most lawyers. If I had to do wills and estates, I'd cut my throat with a rusty spoon. So I decided that the law was cool, and being in the classroom was required to some degree, but I knew that my education was going to come from going to courts and watching people who were trial lawyers try cases. Mm. And I did that throughout my law school career. And when I got out, I started my own individual practice. And I lost my first two cases. Mm. And I was really good at the facts. I knew my facts. I did my homework. And there was an older trial attorney who had watched both cases. And after I lost the second one, he came up to me and he said, "If you buy me a steak dinner, I'll tell you what you're doing wrong."
Oh, wow.
And after spending all of that money on law school, I thought, well, a steak dinner is worth the advice. And it wasn't the steak dinner that about killed me. It was the bottle of scotch he drank. So he said, "You really know your facts, but you don't know how to tell the story." Mm. He said, "The jury needs the facts, but they want to hear the story that takes those facts and turns them into your client's hero journey." Mm. He said, even a guy that is, and I was a defense lawyer, said even a guy that's guilty can be a recovering scoundrel. And mm. therefore, they can have a journey as a hero. Mm. Your job representing your client is to take the jury through that hero's journey so they relate to your client, and therefore you're going to get a better verdict every time. Mm. So the storytelling aspect of being a lawyer is one that's often underrated, but absolutely is the difference maker. Everybody can tell the facts. You've got to be able to tell the facts within the context of a story that the jury can relate to. Therefore, they like your client. If they like your client, they're much more likely to give you a better verdict.
Hmm. That makes sense. What do you think make storytelling underrated? Like, why don't more attorneys, I guess, come out of law school with the understanding that they should be telling the facts in the story as opposed to just telling the facts?
Same reason that most doctors come out of medical school and don't know how to relate to the patient, right? They have no bedside manner. You know why? They're not taught to have any. You go through law school and no one tells you you need to be a good storyteller. They want you to know the law. That's what law school is all about. Law schools are not about practicing law. Even though they have moot courts, no one tells you that you need to be a storyteller. You learn that as a part of your practice. That's why. I mean, it just is the way that it's taught. Mm. And by the way, they beat it out of you in law school. Mm. They don't want you to do anything but know the law. That's what the professors teach. That's what they want to hear you regurgitate. That's why I went to watch trials. What I was getting out of law school was the law, but you know what that comes from? A book. And I was like, this is not reality. I need to see reality. But even at that point, watching the professionals, I didn't make the connection.
Man, you were blessed with this mentor over dinner. Did this individual continue to mentor you after this steak dinner, or was this just a one night mentorship?
We had many drinks together. Lawyers, unfortunately, are real heavy duty drinkers. Trial lawyers even more so because of the stress you are under during a trial. The stress is huge, and you after that's over, there's the release, and there's always bars where trial lawyers gather. That's where I went, and that's where he was. So yeah, we continued on, and I came to the conclusion that the easiest way to learn anything is through someone else's experience.
Right.
If you can tap into that experience, it will shorten your learning curve. That's why mentors matter.
Right.
Someone who doesn't have a mentor is just making their career longer and harder because you're learning by trial and error. Much, much better to have someone who's already gone through the minefield and can at least point out the path. Now, you still have to take the path,
right.
but you don't have to guess, right? So no, and that's what I did. I went, I listened. As a young lawyer, you better know, you better keep your mouth shut until you have the right to open your mouth. And I was okay with that because I love the stories. I love listening to how people did strategy. Before you know it, I was able to incorporate that into my practice. And at some point, I was a really good lawyer.
So you went from really good lawyer, fast forward 25 years. So you have a very successful law career. Now, before we got on, you share with me that you are also an ex-felon. And so I would like for you to share with my listeners what you share with me in terms of just giving insight to the entitlement that you were referring to that you had that led you to make the decisions you made that landed you in prison, and then your transformation journey from there and beyond.
Well, the downside of being a successful attorney is that you develop a huge ego. No one can be a trial attorney and not have a huge ego. You have to be a performer. You've got to be willing to be in front of the jury and your client. So I developed that ego. And a part of that ego was I started to believe my press clippings. I started to believe that I was as good as people told me I was. And my client base, because I practiced labor and employment law, my client base had some very unsavory characters in it. And I was intrigued by them. And by the way, trial lawyers are also adrenaline junkies. Your adrenaline is pumping when you're in the middle of a case and you're in front of the jury and there's an opponent and you're working the case. So once that's over, right, you don't immediately start the next day with another case. So, but you need that adrenaline, and my clients provided that for me. Unfortunately, I was a bad guy wannabe. I hung around with them, and before you know it, I wanted to be part of the club. To be part of the club, you had to do certain things that made you a part of the club. And the things that were required to be a member were illegal. So very profitable law practice on top of the world, lovely wife, two sons, beautiful house. I had the life that I should have been satisfied with, but I wasn't. I craved more, and I craved that excitement that came from hanging out with guys who were bad and who did bad things. And I did too. I engaged in illegal activities, and eventually it caught up with me. I was indicted by a federal grand jury on 33 counts of taking bribes, kickbacks, and threatening government witnesses. I had two trials And at the end of the second trial, I was sentenced to 7 years of incarceration in a federal prison. That destroyed my law career, by the way. Not only did it devastate my family, it left them destitute. I spent all of our savings, my son's college education funds, and put a second mortgage on our home, all trying to stay out of prison. But the reality was, I'd committed the crimes I was charged with. And when I was found guilty, I went to prison. That destroyed, again, not only did it destroy my family, but also it destroyed my ability to be a lawyer. I can no longer practice law.
Thank you for sharing that. And you were also mentioning that but before we got on here, that you have a wife that is more resilient than you, and that your wife was the backbone of your family, held your family together, and made the decision to stay with you throughout your time in prison and afterwards. Like, what would you say, I guess, like, played a role in your family remaining together during such a trying time? And was that ultimately the reason for you making the decision to transform your life?
Oh, absolutely. With that amount of time, a 5.5 year bit, seldom do you come out of that period of time in prison and have a family that's left. And by the way, no one should think that they're entitled to that. I certainly did not. My wife and I had that discussion before I even went to prison, and I told her, I said, anytime you need to leave, leave. With that understanding, she didn't leave. And the reason that she tells me, she said, I knew there was good underneath because I knew you when you were good. And the question was, are you going to get back to who you were before? And I said, yeah. But I guarantee you, I did not come to that conclusion easily. My ego was large in prison too. And I would not admit that I was responsible. I played the role of victim. Other people had put me in prison. And I spent the first 2 years of my incarceration planning revenge. I was going to get even with everyone who had put me in prison, those that had testified against me. It was only when I realized that the guys that had been in prison when I started coming back while I was still in prison. And recidivism is 70%. That means that 70% of all prisoners will go back to prison within 5 years after their release. And that shocked me. That was a dose of clarity that I had not expected. And I suddenly realized that if I did not change, that was me. That I was going to get out, probably lose my family, but I was going to get out and probably I no longer could practice law. What was I going to do? Well, the guys that I'd hung out with would certainly give me an opportunity to continue to be a crook. So I knew that I'd take that opportunity for a variety of reasons. And I decided that if I didn't change, I saw my life in front of me with the people that were coming back to prison. And at that point, I made the commitment to change. And I asked my wife and my two sons, would they support me in this transformation? Because it wasn't going to be easy. And they said they would. And so, with their support, I started to face the reality of who I was and how my behavior was destructive. And I made the decision to change.
That makes sense. You said earlier, and we'll go ahead and transition to the coaching you do after this, but you said earlier that learning from p other people's experience is the greatest teacher. Like, you're able to have a better career and grow faster, just simply have a better life. And it also sounds like the people that were returning back to prison before you, it's almost like you learned from their experience. Like, that served as your eye opener of like, I can't be the person that's coming back to prison. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, absolutely. Again, the example, the stark example, the reality that they faced going back, and not changing, going back to the same environment. And by the way, for most of them, maybe there wasn't an option. I understand that some aren't able to get out of that environment. I had a family, I had an environment that would allow me to get out of that. All I had to do was make up my mind to do so. And that's the difference. But yes, you're right. And I'm sure that some people in your audience are thinking, geez, wouldn't you think that going to prison was enough?
Right.
No, it wasn't enough. I can tell you that it's unfortunate we fool ourselves, right? My ego was in control. And until I took control, my ego dictated my action. My ego dictated that in prison, I was going to be one of the toughest guys. I was going to be the smartest guy. And so I hadn't really changed. The environment had changed. I hadn't changed. My role and my image was the same. Only when I realized that if I didn't, these consequences were greater than I'd ever imagined, because I was going to do my time. I knew I would do my time. Prison wasn't going to kill me. The question was, afterwards, would it kill me? And the answer was absolutely it will. And here's the example. So no, but once again, I have to credit my family. If my family had not stayed with me, if my wife had not stayed with me, if my sons hadn't, I don't know whether I could have gone through the transformation journey because I did it while I was in prison. And my ego fought me every step of the way. It did not want me to be different.
Right.
Why? Because I liked who I was before I went to prison. I liked who I was while I was in prison. I got to the point where I realized again the consequences of not changing were greater. And I took control of my life. I changed who I was. For instance, I started teaching GED in prison. Right? That was something that if you had asked me when I went in, are you willing to serve? By the way, that's service. I get paid for it, right? It was something that I had the education to do. And I saw the group that needed it that didn't have a high school education. And in prison, I decided to start serving. And it was one thing that I did. And by the way, here was an old white guy with a lot of young blacks from East St. Louis who were forced to go to the GED class. They didn't want to go. They didn't have a choice. And so the question was, how can I help them? And it was a struggle for me, but I think that I did. I stay in touch with some of those guys even now, and I've been out 20 years. So no, my goal was I'm going to give you the help you need to get what they say you have to get. Let's see if we can't work this out. I never would have had that attitude. I wouldn't have ever done it. But it was a part of that process. I believe that if you're going to change, transform, you need to consider what you have to do to help others.
That makes sense. And thank you for sharing that. I want to point out two lessons for my listeners really fast, just drawing from the experience that you just shared with us. Number one is the importance of learning from other people. And that's, I would say, other people that are, doing both good and bad. You have the lawyer that watched both of your first two cases, and then you took that individual to dinner, and that individual shared with you what you could do better. You listened, and you had a successful career as a result. And then, as you're in prison, you're listening to, or you're watching individuals make, the same mistakes that are landing them back in prison. And oftentimes, we as people tend to look at individuals that are doing wrong and think there is nothing to learn from them, when in fact, like perhaps the lesson could just simply be what not to do when paying attention. But the next lesson that I also want to point out is the importance of having a strong support group, like you sharing that your family being present and being the reason that you were able to transform is so huge. Because I know so many people that they want to transform, they want to do better, and I'm sharing with them like, hey, you need to remove yourself from the people that are not truly supporting you in your transformation, and find your tribe that can truly help you with that. And so, you sharing your family being there for you is just, it's a testament to that. So I want to say again, thank you for sharing your experience there. What inspired you to begin coaching executives. And how did you transition from your release to coaching? Like, how did you get into coaching?
Well, when I got out, I could no longer practice law. And I explored every avenue by contacting everyone that I knew about were there opportunities. It turns out that a 50-year-old ex-con does not have a lot of opportunities. So I realized that I was going to have to make my own. And I sat down and I did the pros and the cons on a piece of paper about what my skill sets were. And I have a very good skill set. First, as a lawyer, I'm a critical thinker.
Absolutely.
But I was also that storyteller, right? I developed those skill sets, two separate skill sets, but one career. And I realized that the experience that I had, the fight that I had with my ego, what put me in prison was not dissimilar to the experience of a lot of leaders. They don't go to prison, but they are fighting the same issues. As they become more successful, they start to live in an echo chamber. And that echo chamber is the people around them repeat what they say, right? So suddenly you're the infallible, all-knowing guy in charge. And the people start to lose the ability to tell you the truth. Why? Because you may not want to hear it. In fact, a lot of people do not want to hear the truth. So if you are trying to stay in a position of authority with a person who you report to that doesn't want to hear the truth, you decide to stop telling them the truth. What you do is you tell them what they want to hear. So as I looked at leadership, I said, this is a problem that a lot of leaders encounter. There's no way that they don't. Internally, it's very difficult to find the person who has the psychological safety to tell the leader the truth. I thought, that sounds like something that first I'm really good at. I've told myself the truth. And second, I think there's a need. And so I decided I was going to try coaching. This was after a few months. And by the way, it's hard to get a client. Believe me, everyone who's out there, first, a lot of people think they can coach. You better have the experience to be able to coach first. If you've got a certificate, I'm okay with that. Doesn't teach you how to coach, no
Right.
more than the law degree taught me how to be a trial lawyer. You've got to have something else going on. You've got to have the experience. And I had the experience of failure. And that's something that most people do not want to share. We always hear about the success. I've never heard anyone go to the gambling boats and lose, right? Everyone wins. No one wants to share failure. And I was like, I got it. There is nothing as a leader you can do that was worse than what I did and paid the price for. Let me share that with you. And let's talk about failure. And let's talk about recovering from failure. And it just became the cornerstone of my coaching process. I just did a TEDx talk. You mentioned it. Thank you. It's called Everyone Needs a Fool in Their Life. That's based off of the jester who sat at the throne of the king in medieval times. And everyone believes that the guy was it was always a guy. The guy was an entertainer, told a joke, did a little dance, sang a little song. No, that's not why he was there. Because he dressed and acted like a fool, he was considered to be crazy. And that gave him permission to tell the king the truth and not get his head cut off. Remember, the king was appointed by divine right. God had made him king. Anyone who challenged the king committed the crime of a heresy. And the crime of heresy was punished by death. The fool was exempted from that. He had the psychological safety to tell the king the truth. And I said, that's my role. For those who want to hear the truth, I've got the experience. I know how to tell it. I'm a critical thinker. We can have a real good conversation. And I will tell you the truth. And that was the basis for my deciding to become a coach. And that's how I got my first client. By the way, 80% of all those people referred to me do not do business with me.
Really, it's interesting.
Absolutely.
We could
And
talk.
I'm okay with that.
So,
I absolutely am.
why do you think that 80% of the people that are referred to you don't do business with you? Is it because they don't like hearing the truth? Is it like what do you think? Why do you think that is?
Well, first, yes, you have got, I have, you can tell by my conversation, I have a very direct style. I found that that suits me, but it also suits those my coaching program. And I'll tell you that the best description of my coaching was from a client of mine. And when I asked him for a testimonial, he said, absolutely. And the testimonial was, Paul is like a Sherpa. He will get you to the mountaintop, but he will not carry your pack. And that's how I coach. I would, if you tell me you want to accomplish something, first I'm going to question you as to why. Why do you want to do this? If you tell me you want to earn $1 million, I'm happy with what you say, but I want to know why. What are you trying to really accomplish with that goal? Once you've convinced me that you're committed to that goal, then we're going to get there. But by the way, I will not carry your pack. When you tell me you're going to do something, you better do it. Because if you don't, you and I have a problem. And the way that I do this, Joe, is I put 50% of my compensation in results. So at the end of the year, my client and I have either reached the goal or we haven't. If we haven't reached that goal, I don't get that 50%.
Oh, wow.
I love having skin in the game. I think that every coach needs to have skin in the game. By the way, most coaches, like they tell me, said, you're insane. That's crazy. No, it's not. First, I pick my clients carefully. If you're not committed, we're not doing this. You got to convince me. I will convince you that I'm the person if you convince me that your goal is one you will commit to. That to me is how you do a business, especially a service business where I'm investing my time and energy and my experience to help you do what you tell me you want to do.
Absolutely.
I'm not telling you, believe me, I don't tell anyone what they should try to do. They tell me. I tell them whether or not it's realistic, but then I tell them, are you committed? So that 20% that stick with me, we do very well together.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. How do you go about targeting the, because you say you pick your clients carefully. Like, what does lead generation look for you? Like, how do you go about targeting the businesses that you want to do business with, especially with you work with organizations that do up to $1 billion in revenue?
Well, first, I've given up on public companies because they are too gutless to hire a ex-con. That's the way
So if you're
it
listening, right now, and
is.
you're an ex-con, and you're trying to get into professional service, speaking, coaching, give up on public companies, go private.
Oh, absolutely. Corporations, the publicly held corporations have image issues. And if you have an ex-con as a coach, even though they may be doing the best thing ever, that could be a publicity disaster. So I stopped. I mean, after a while, I was like, because I would always get the referral, right? And I'd have the conversation. And they would, and by the way, I learned up front, I got to tell someone my past. The last thing I ever want to do is have somebody hire me and find out the past. Because so no, why do that? So of course. This is a part of who I am. This is a part of what I bring to the table. It is valuable from my perspective. I think it is for my clients. It should be valuable to you, but you better know that I come with baggage. And it's not baggage I'm trying to get rid of either. I'm okay with the baggage. You have to be okay. Public companies suffer from this image issue. And therefore, even though they say you would be the guy, we can't hire you. So I do private companies, and I love family-owned businesses. First, they are always so dysfunctional, I'm never out of work.
So private companies, family-owned businesses, how do you typically go about finding them? Is this like LinkedIn? Are you like, cold calling, cold emailing? Like how like
No, I seldom cold call. I what I do is obviously I work referrals.
Okay.
I'm all about if we're having a good relationship as a coach and a coachee, I immediately want you to tell me, is there someone else I should be in touch with? Now that you know my style, know what I'm trying to accomplish, and you see what we're doing together, tell me who else I can help. And always, there's always somebody.
Is that do you mind kind of sharing with us how you have that conversation? Like for the coach that's listening and they're like, man, I haven't really figured out how to bring up referrals, how to the language. Like, do you said exactly how you just said it, or like,
first, Joel, I've got to convince you that I'm as good as I think I am. Right? So
right.
I'm not going to ask you that first year for a referral. What I am going to do is wait until you say, we've accomplished our goal and you pay me that other 50%. Right? So that 50% is in the bank. Once we've accomplished it and you write that check for me and you sign up for another year, that's when I go, obviously, why wouldn't I? Obviously,
right.
You're willing to pay me and you want another year. You believe this is valuable. Tell me who else I can help. And
that
that's
makes sense.
How I look at it. You know somebody that needs help. Tell me if I can help them. And there's some guys who go, you know, this guy does, but your style is not going to work with him. Okay. Because I'm not changing my style. Right? It is what it is.
Yeah.
So I bet through my existing clients, whether or not a new person is, it would make it in my program. You know, my contention is I don't want to waste my time and energy, and I don't want to waste their money by trying to get into a relationship that doesn't work.
That makes sense.
So I let my clients vet them for me. They then do the warm introduction. All right. Cold calling's too tough for me. It really is. You don't know me. I don't know you. And suddenly you go, why are you bugging me? I think you may. No, come on. You don't know me anyways. I don't like it. So I haven't done it. But I now have that warm call. I want to get to talk to C. I have B do the introduction.
That makes
so
sense.
A, B, C. B, I know. B knows me. You actually, B gives me the lead, and I go, please make the warm introduction. Once you do that, then we are able to have a conversation because I've got the guy that they trust and know who's vouching for me. We then go through the conversation about, are we going to be okay with each other, right?
Right.
We've got that type of, and I'm upfront, really upfront with this. Also, when I say, look, 50% of my money's based on results, that's something they don't hear from other coaches.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Is that like a selling point?
Hell yeah. Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? They're
right.
saying, well, if we don't hit it, I don't pay. Yeah. Why should you pay? If I haven't got you to the mountaintop, you're going to carry your pack, by the way. Understand it's hard. Hard. And I convince people to understand how hard the journey is. If you are looking for coaching that's impactful, it is difficult. It's just a difficult journey. That's why you need the guide. If you could do it on your own, you wouldn't be talking to me anyway. You'd go, so when someone talks to me, I'm like, what are you trying to accomplish? When we have that conversation, I go, why aren't you able to do that yourself? I mean, that's too simple for me, right? You get guys who go, I need to read more books. Well, then read more books. What do you want me to tell you? I'll give you a list. You want a list of books? Seriously? Read a freaking book. No, stop that. I'm a waste of my time and expertise.
Certainly makes sense. So, talk to us about the work you do with your clients. When you work with clients, how do you go about helping them recognize their potential so they can reach higher levels of success?
First, I like to hear that I do a thing called possibility conversations. I want to have a conversation with a guy who wants to be on my program, and I want him to tell me not probability, not what he can do, but the possibility. Tell me the possibility. What is that thing that you believe is so outrageous you've not even said it out loud to anybody that you want to accomplish as a leader? Because that now lets me know, if you're honest about that and you come out and you say yes, usually you can tell in the conversation that they have the potential, maybe not to do that, but to do a lot more than they're doing. I don't want to hear, like I said, I don't want to hear when I say, oh, what? So what's the possibility? And they go, book. Okay. Oh, that's nothing. You have no potential left. I'm sorry. We're done. So that starts it for me. And I've been doing this a long time now. When I got out of the joint, 25 years I've been coaching. So I can first, I build myself as the no BS leadership coach. And yeah, I have a real good antenna for BS. I used to be a BSer, so it's very difficult to get around me. And I can tell when you're pulling my chain, right? When you're not serious.
Right.
Experience will do that. Obviously, having clients and going through that process, and also letting clients go. Right. You know, the concept of coaching is I have to continue to believe I'm providing value every time we meet. At some point, I come to the realization you've grown to where you wanted to be. Maybe it's time for you to find someone different. I'm okay with that. You know, like I said, I go all the way up to $1 billion, though. So I can tell you that there isn't an issue that I have not addressed with my clients, unless you get beyond $1 billion. And if you get beyond $1 billion, you should have two coaches. I don't know. You know, I'm at it. Do luxury coaching. So no, that's pretty much it. I wish I could, you know, everyone looks for the formula, Joe. A part of being successful is you have to be intuitive about who your clients are and who you want them to be. And you need to be able to delve into them as a coach to determine whether or not they're serious and also whether or not they have the bandwidth. You know, it's unfortunate, but I am pretty brutal about this. I can't coach stupid. I just can't. And if I get to the point of where I'm saying you're too hard-headed, for instance, I'm stubborn. But I'm more than willing to look at a different perspective. But if I'm dealing with you and I say you are too stubborn to even listen to another point of view, we probably need to wrap this up. Or if you tell me, you know, my goal is a private airplane, like, dude, that, you know, I'm sorry, that's not a worthwhile goal.
Yeah,
that's a reward. You're just rewarding yourself. That's not a goal. So stop talking about that, because that's not what you should be about as a leader. Leaders need to get better.
That makes sense. So you have a conversation about the possibilities. Once you have this conversation, what's next? Is it figuring out how to make that possibility come true? How do you go, like, what would you say is the next step for you that works with you and your clients?
Well, I base my coaching on action plans.
Okay.
And we'll have no more, as far as I'm concerned, you cannot have more than three strong initiatives or goals that you're looking at to accomplish in a year. Doesn't work. Any more than three, and you diffuse the energy and the attention and the focus and the time to where you don't accomplish either one or any of them. We look at three. So for each of those, we develop an action plan.
Okay.
The action plan has a very definitive time frame, right? Okay. It has to be done within a year.
Okay.
That means that possibility goal may be a five-year plan. We're not going to try to do 5 years in a year. What we're going to do is slice that into five annual action plans. And we're going to have a coaching session every other week.
Okay.
And guys are like, that's a lot. Yeah, it is. By the way, if the goal is audacious, we got to be working on that. Every other week, I don't want to hear you're not working on. So we set it up. Every action plan has steps. Right. Every 2 weeks, we talk about, did you accomplish the step? If you did not, why not? We need to have that talk. If you did, kudos. Time to move to the next step. Very regimented. Right? The conversations are not. The action plan is. Why? Focus, intense focus of energy and time, and learning how to say no.
Like the client, learning how to say no to like things that could get in the way.
The distractions that are in front of every leader suck time and energy off of their initiatives. I call that extracurricular activity. You can have all the correct extracurricular activity that you want as long as it does not deviate you from your three initiatives.
So and a lot of people tend to mess up there. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember squirrel, right? Squirrel, we're gone. The next bright new shiny thing sucks the time and energy attention away from. I will not allow that. I'm sorry, you can tell me about it. And I can say, that's really cool. Talk to me next year. Does that have anything to do with one of these three action plans? If it does, we'll plug it in. If it doesn't, say no.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So would you say that the most challenging obstacle for executives and leaders in billion-dollar companies is the shiny object, or like these distractions that pull them away, or is there something else you would say is the greatest challenge?
I would say the first thing is that they don't see reality because they don't get told the truth. So the further up the ladder you go, there's filters.
Okay.
Every layer of any organization has a filter, and if you're at the top of the organization, you don't know what's going on at the first level. That's where the action normally is, by the way, that first level. But there's a filter on every level of hierarchy after that, so that when you finally hear something, it is a distortion of the truth. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, yes, because you are in a position of authority that gets to make decisions, people keep showing you stuff they want. Not what you want, what they want. And they want you to say yes. And if you say yes, you've now devoted time and energy to that. No, I'm sorry. By the way, I'm glad they've got something they want to take care of. Let them figure out how to take care of it. Otherwise, if they need you actively engaged in that, are they the person that should be trying to accomplish that, whatever it is? So your three initiatives should be big initiatives. These are, like I said, it's not reading a book. It's an initiative that has to do with increasing employee engagement, right? Whatever it may be, it's got to be big. Otherwise, let's not devote a year to that. Focus. I will keep you focused. I tell people, when you stop doing the action plan, you are starting to remove my money.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for sharing here. This is another lesson I do want to draw for my listeners based on what you're saying right now. Is like how important it is, no matter if it's your career, your personal life, your love life, whatever it is, your health, where if you have a goal and someone enters into your life and they're trying to get you to do things that distract you from the goal, that pulls you away from the goal. Like you have to have the discernment and the ability to say no. You know, that's something, you know, me as a young entrepreneur that I've began to learn myself is like, you know, the distractions compound. Like at first I used to think like, okay, someone asked me something, I say yes. Like, I mean, it's only 20 minutes. Like it, you know, well, those 20 minutes add up.
Absolutely.
thank you for sharing that. Were you about to say something
well,
after that?
First, you're spot on that we whether we like it or not, we have a limited amount of energy and limited amount of time. Now you can replenish energy, you can't replenish time. So when you start looking at this, you're right. That 20 minutes, first, that 20 minutes is not 20 minutes. That 20 minutes is stop engaging with what you're doing that matters, engage with this person, and then have to re-engage with what you were doing. The mind does not automatically flip over to the task that you were doing. So that 20 minutes is actually 40 minutes, 50 minutes. 60 minutes. So we look at it and we say, well, it's just, no, it's not. Believe me, It's taking your attention and time away from what you need to do. You now have to go back. The pull of distractions is extraordinarily energy and time gobblers. They just take it away from you. You never get it back.
Thank you for sharing that. I know we have to wrap up here soon. I want to ask for the coach that they want to be able to speak to clients about a 3-year goal or a 5-year goal, and then sign those clients up and get those clients to break that, let's say 3-year goal, break that 3-year goal down to a, or, like year one, what can we focus on year one, year two? Like, how would you advise a young coach to go about doing that? Because that's something that's hard for young coaches. It's hard for a young coach to talk to someone about a 3-year goal or a 5-year goal and then have the ability to break that down annually and then get the client to commit to year one first. How would you go about advising that young coach to being able to do that?
Well, you always want to tie whatever you're doing into the 3-year goal. You
Okay.
never get, you don't tell them you can't have a 3-year goal. You tell them absolutely it's a worthy 3-year goal and we're working our way there. But we also have to do this step by step. We can't skip year one and two to get to year three. That's why the action plans resonate with people. First, leaders like to see something on a piece of paper that says, these are what we're going to accomplish. But clearly, you're always connecting that to the third year. But
Okay.
you definitely have to break this down. And leaders understand that they can't get to year three without doing year one and two.
Okay.
So once you explain it that way about you're not forgetting year three. You
That
don't
makes
want
sense.
them to, you don't want them to think that this is all that you're about. And by the way, every once in a while, it's good to have a look, I believe that the years develop, it divides into quarters. So once a quarter, you have I call them milestones, right? You have a milestone where we look back at what's been accomplished. And then we look forward to the next quarter. But a part of that conversation that I have is the connection to the 3-year goal, that we have now made a step, an important step, a quarter step towards that 3-year goal. That way they're constantly, they understand you recognize the importance of that goal and you're in it with them to achieve it, but the plan has to be followed.
That makes sense. Thank you for sharing. What is one personal development practice that you have that helps you go grow as an entrepreneur and leader?
Well, first, I believe that the mind and the body are connected in ways that we are continuing to find out about. So, if you are not keeping yourself physically fit, you are not mentally fit.
I like that.
I believe that first, the body needs to move, and I also believe in nature. There's a Japanese concept called forest washing, where if you walk through the woods, it will clear your mind. And I use that as a template. Every day I go to the gym and it's a routine. I tell all coaches need to understand that coaching is a transfer of energy. We're going to, if we've got a good conversation, like we've got a very good conversation. I know I'm talking way too much, but that's what you invited me on to do.
Absolutely.
We're having a good transfer of energy. I can feel it.
Absolutely.
Right. And I'll do 6 or 7 coaching calls a day. And most coaches would say, that's insane. I say, well, that's because you're not having the right exchange. Right. See, once again, I'm selecting my clients carefully. If I've got somebody that's not working out, I'm gonna tell them we either need to get back on track or we need to end the relationship.
Absolutely.
I'm okay with doing that. Why? I've lost the energy. So I'm looking at that transfer of energy, but to do that, I have to start the day energetic. And I have to take care of my body and I have to take care of my mind. I'm an avid reader. I think the coaches need to constantly be reading, not necessarily books, maybe articles. There's all sorts of things that coaches need to be relevant. Because if you become a one-trick pony, you lose your effectiveness. You've got to understand the world is changing rapidly. You
Absolutely.
better keep up because the
Absolutely.
leader has to keep up. So that concept of being relevant is important. That means continue to educate yourself. Know about your client's business as much as they do. And that doesn't mean know the payroll. It means know the trend, see how it's going. Is artificial intelligence going to have an impact? If it is, we've got to factor that into the plan.
Right.
Right? Because suddenly it may have changed things. But the concept of being energetic is all about exchanging energy with your client so that they remain engaged. The first time your client finds you boring is the last time they have a coaching call with you.
You're only as good as your last coaching call.
Yeah. And by the way, I always believe that it's part of my job is to make a guy laugh. Yeah, I absolutely believe that humor is one of those things that is underrated.
Absolutely.
And I'm not, my wife tells me I'm not as funny as I think I am, but I'll make you laugh. I'll say something out, even if it's saying something outrageous.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you to laugh. I'm going to get you to feel better about yourself at the end of our coaching call than you did at the beginning.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. What is one book or podcast that has helped you in your entrepreneurial journey?
Well, my book.
please. I like that. Please. I like that. Shameless plug there. I like that. So please, for my listeners, give us a quick description of what they will get from your book.
Well, first, my book, when I finished my book 12 years ago, I told my editor, I said, no one's going to read this book. And he said, why not? It's a good book. I said, no, there's too much about self-care in this book.
Mm.
What you get when you read Workquake is two things. You get my experience about specific issues. The book's divided into two segments. One's called the Bottom Line, and the other's called The Morning Mantra. Bottom line is practical lessons that I believe matter and are relevant to anyone who's in a leadership position. The morning mantra is about self-care, which now is part of the lingo, right? The jargon.
Right.
We always, 12 years ago, if I talked about self-care with a leader, they'd go, that's like work-life balance. What are you talking about? That's not the deal. But I believed it then. And I, by the way, I got through prison doing physical stuff as well as mental stuff. I walked the track. I did the weights. Why? Stress. Let's get rid of the stress. And every leader is covered in stress. How do you get rid of it? Self-care. So when you read my book, it's giving you the opportunity to do the morning mantra on a daily basis that will give you an outlet to reduce stress. That's why the book is multifaceted and is now much more popular than it was 12 years ago. All you have to do is wait.
Thank you for sure.
Around.
Thank you for sure. And please share with my listeners where they can find you and where they can get your book.
The book is on Amazon. I have six grandchildren, buy a bunch. So, they can find me on LinkedIn at Paul Glover Coaching, and also my website is paulglovercoaching.com. Those are the two ways to reach me. I appreciate any questions anybody has about anything. You get in touch with me, I will be back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to co-sign on that. Before we started the recording, Paul and I spoke briefly, and nothing is off limits. You know, Paul is an open book, so much so that I refer to him as Uncle Paul after our conversation. So he's definitely big honest when he says that. So final question here. If there was a principle or practice that you weren't able to share today and would like to share, what would it be?
You know, it sounds trite, but it's true. Be true to yourself. Whatever you're going to do, especially if you're going to be a coach, it is so easy to decide that you're going to do what the client needs that is not true to you. And that never works well. So you need to know who you are as a coach and what you're willing to do, how long you're willing to tell the truth, because I believe that that's a part of the deal. And that would be the thing, is that we are often convinced that we need to not be ourselves. That we need, and by the way, that was my pre-prison. I built a carefully constructed self-image that was shattered because it wasn't true. It led me down that, it led me away from integrity. And the concept of integrity starts with you. If you're not true to yourself, you cannot have the integrity to coach others. It's a sham.
Man, thank you for sharing. Paul, thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
It's been a pleasure, Joe. It always is.
Likewise, likewise. And to my listeners, I really do hope that you take something that you learned today and implement it in your daily path. We've covered a lot today. There has been a lot of valuable lessons. So I really do hope that you take action on something that you learned today and use it in your life. Until next time, I hope you have a blessed day. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Daily Path Podcast. If you would like to launch your own podcast show to expand your reach, grow your network, and sign more premium clients for your business, visit dailypathacademy.com to learn how we can help you launch an impactful podcast that changes lives around the world and acquires high-ticket clients for your business. That's dailypathacademy.com.